Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bolin. Generally, these days, I'm fixing the coffee machine.
You've moved from video producer, video writer to now you're the coffee machine.
You know what's the weird part? It was a promotion.
Oh, good. Good for you. So you're going to have many new trades around here, I guess, is what you're saying, right?
I got a BlackBerry and a bag of espresso beans and everything, man.
Okay, so just listen every week and see what Ben comes up with as his new title, because you're kind of the jack of all trades around here, right?
We're on the up and up, and I'm a dynamic person in a dynamic organization. I couldn't even keep a straight face.
Well, very good, very good. So we'll listen for your new title soon.
Scott, I have to tell you, though, no matter what my job title is, this podcast is a labor of love for me, and I really enjoy showing up, especially when we do a continuing series.
Yeah, and this is, the third or fourth part now? I've lost track.
Trilogy?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe the third part here. We are going to talk about Stirling engines today. And Stirling engines, this is one that has been suggested by a listener or two over the past, I don't know, year and a half or so, really. We got one recently, and it came from a text, actually, Ben. And the phone number, I won't read the phone number, obviously, but it has an area code that comes from the province of Alberta in Canada. And that's kind of like over Montana, if you're here in the States. But he says that he's an engineer, and he loved the Hit and Miss Engine podcast that we did. Said he likes that antique power types, you know, the antique power source type thing that we're going through, and said that he does have a suggestion, and he'd like to hear one on the Stirling engine. We were actually lining up one for the Stirling engine anyways.
Hey-o.
So this worked out real well.
Yeah.
To get a listener to chime in with that too.
Does this listener have a name?
No. There's just a number. It's a text sent from this phone number.
Was it you?
No, it wasn't me.
Okay.
Wasn't me, I promise. But he says he wants to wants us to cover it, and he says he spent his pre-engineering days volunteering in a museum, so that's where he got hooked on these antique engines. And that's where he became fascinated with, those antique power sources and, you know, all the engines that we've been talking about. So this fit right in. And he mentions that there's also a website where someone redesigned Stirling engines, so it makes it look like a futuristic, the way that the Stirling engine might go in the future is what he's saying.
Oh, nice.
And so he says he wants to hear a show on this type of external combustion engine.
Well, John Doe from the wide world of text messages, have we got a show for you.
Exactly, and I said external combustion engine. Most people probably haven't ever heard of an external combustion engine.
Actually, I'm going to level with you, man. No idea. From the name, let me go out on a limb here and say it's a combustion engine on the outside of something.
Well, there you go, Ben. You got it. Let's just wrap it up with that. So thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
No, we'll just keep going, I guess. That's probably enough. It's probably not enough for our listeners.
Yeah, you know what? They might not even know that Stirling is spelled S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G.
Oh, good point.
What if they Googled it, man?
Looking for a silver engine. A Stirling silver engine. That wouldn't work. So, again, that's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G, Stirling engine. And we do have a How Stirling Engines Work article on our site. So, you know, you can find it at HowStuffWorks.com. That's probably the easiest way to get this information. And then, you know, I encourage you to look around and find some of the other designs that people have come up with, because there are literally hundreds of ways that you can put these things together to make them work in different ways, in different applications.
So what is it exactly?
Well, it was invented in 1816 by Robert Stirling. And the uses for them it's pretty efficient, actually. It's actually a really efficient way to do work, really. But this does have some problems that inherently mean that it will not be a replacement for the internal combustion engine in cars and trucks and things like that. It just, at this point, it won't work. Now, I haven't looked at the future of the Stirling engine that was recommended by our listener here, but I'm going to check that out too, I promise. But really, We'll get to that at the end. Mm-hmm. There's some downsides to this whole thing. But right now the uses are in, you know, for quiet machinery, like things that require stealth operation, like auxiliary power in yachts. Submarines is where Stirling engines are used because they need absolute quiet power. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can maintain a low profile. I'm trying to think of some other uses for it. Really, a lot of them are just hobby uses right now at this point. But again, auxiliary pumps, they can be used for heat pumps. They can also be used for refrigeration units. Depends on how you use them. You can do a variety of things with these.
So there's a bit of, it sounds like, there's a bit of latitude in how these are applied.
Yes, exactly. And even more latitude in the way you fuel them. The fuel for these things can range from, because it's an external combustion engine,
right?
It requires heating and cooling in some cases on the outside of the engine in order to operate. So this is a sealed system, and I'll explain it in a minute,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It's a sealed system that requires an external heat source. So when you say external heat source, that could be anything. I mean, I've got a list of them here, but I mean, it could be,
down the list real quick.
You could use natural gas, propane, gas, diesel fuel, biodiesel. You could use solar power. You could use, you could light a candle underneath it. You could put a piece of wood underneath it that's burning.
Crazy talk.
It depends on, it just whatever you need. Some of these things are sensitive enough to operate with the heat generated by your hand. If you put a small Stirling engine in your hand, it's enough to operate the engine. The heat just transferred from the palm of your hand into that engine makes it work.
That's weird to me. You know, now I have visions of people in yachts and submarines just sort of like doing the laying on of hands to make the
go. Slightly different in that case.
But, I think you'd have to have a bigger hand.
They of course have a more sophisticated system. It's an automatic, you know, whether it's propane or whatever mm-hmm. it is that operates that natural gas. But, the idea is that, you know, you've just got this quiet flame that fuels this very, very quiet engine mm-hmm. and that drives whatever auxiliary pump you need to do whatever work you need to be done.
Why is it so quiet?
And when I say external combustion engine, I mean, there's no internal combustion happening at all. So you're not trying to, in any way, muffle small explosions, really. You've got a constant flame. Like, it's as loud as, a Bic lighter. That's mm-hmm. it. Or, a burning piece of wood. That's all the noise you'll hear.
As loud as the external heat source.
Exactly, yeah. And how loud is solar power? So...
I don't know.
Or solar power.
That's one of those. That's one of those one hand clapping questions.
Yeah.
How loud is solar power?
I know exactly. It's just dead quiet. So it's really extremely functional for the types of applications that they found for it already. They're mm-hmm. trying to extrapolate that into other uses at this point. But like I said, it's not really happening for cars and trucks right now.
Yet.
So where do you want to go with this? Let's talk. I guess we could talk about the Stirling cycle.
Yes, that's what I wanted to hear. I mean, how many cycles are there? Is this still a four-cycle engine?
This is a four-cycle engine.
Is it a different cycle?
This is weird. This is it's different. It's a different cycle. It's not, the one we've talked about in the past. So mm-hmm. there are four parts to the Stirling cycle, and here they are. I'll just read down the list, follow along again. All right, heat's added to the gas inside the heated side of the cylinder, okay? And now, remember, these are heated externally and cooled mm-hmm. externally as well. Mm-hmm. So the pressure builds up, and that forces the piston to move down, and that's the part of the cycle where the work happens. That's where...
It's like the power stroke.
Exactly. That's the power stroke. So then the other piston moves up while that piston moves down, of course, because, they're connected with this mm-hmm. linkage. And... that pushes the hot gas from the cooled cylinder, which formerly, it's cooled, now it's condensing, it's shrinking that gas, I guess, and it's allowing, lowers the pressure, so it makes it easier to compress the gas in the next part of the cycle, okay?
Okay.
So the piston then, in the cooled cylinder, starts to compress the gas, and the heat generated by that compression is then removed by the cooling source. So... even though there's heat being generated by the compression, mm-hmm. the cooled side is the outside is taking that away. It's pulling the heat out of it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a strange process, but you've mm-hmm. got to see it to understand how it works. And the fourth part of this is then the piston, the cooled piston moves up while the heated piston then moves down, and that forces the gas into the heated cylinder where it mm-hmm. heats up again, mm-hmm. and again, it repeats the whole cycle. So it's this continuous up-down, and I know that's really confusing to listen to, without seeing
it. No, it makes sense.
It.
It's like a seesaw.
It
up,
is.
Down.
It
up.
Is, and it's heated, cooled, heated, cooled, and you're talking about expansion, contraction, expansion, contraction, over and over and over again. And really, that's probably the best way to say it. I mean, I would encourage everybody to look at our site, because there's a quick animation. You can hit the play button on the animation on our site four times and get through the four cycles, and it'll show you exactly what's going on. But the best way to describe it is heated, cooled, you know, compression, expansion, compressor, extension. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, what's amazing to me, though, it's still difficult to visualize that happening quietly, you know, because we're talking about, when we talk about engines, especially talk about a combustion engine, as we've said before in previous episodes, we're talking about controlled explosions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you've got exhaust, and you've got other noise, because you've got the timing chain inside. You've got you've got all kinds of things happening that are noisy. You've got pulleys and drive belts and fans and everything else running. This, you've got two. Well, it's just for example, you've got two cylinders, and they're sealed. They're airtight.
Which is so weird. This is the first sealed system engine we've talked about.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's like a hydraulic system almost, but with air. It's it's sealed. It's really as quiet as the bearings are on this whole thing. I mean, if you want to keep it quiet, you keep it lubricated. You keep it. You know, the bearings are the right way. It's just really, really. It's actually very efficient operation, and it's very, very quiet. Very, smooth operation of this whole thing. It's really a smooth operator. It's sophisticated.
Sorry,
but it's not very powerful.
I think I see where the show's going now. We're going to talk about some cons.
It has the potential to be a powerful engine. I mean, it depends on the size of everything that you do. I mean, you could make these really strong, but the problem is, you know, there's a problem, and that's why you don't see them in more common everyday uses, I guess, like cars and trucks.
Sure. Okay.
And I guess the problems are, here's the problems. I'll just go through them. They're real quick. I mean, it's just a couple, but they're big enough that this causes a stumbling block for us.
Do it, but do it in kind of like a dramatic voice so the gravity of it hits us.
I don't know about dramatic voice. I'll try.
Okay. All right.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so remember the heat source is external. Okay, so one thing is that it's not something you can instantly control. I mean, you'd have to turn up the heat, allow this process to take place before anything really happens. So there's going to be a long delay between when you need that power and when you shut that power off. So it's going to continue to operate at, you know, whatever the last temperature was up until it, you know, you can reach it, you know, expand it up to that other temperature.
Yeah.
That's probably a bad way to say all this.
No, I get what you're saying.
But you have to you have to expect a lag time, I guess, in these, and that's on both sides, speeding it up and slowing it down. You need to accommodate, you know, adjust for that lag time in between.
Which reminds us of what? Steam engines.
Exactly, you're right.
Another contender that couldn't quite beat.
That's right.
Good old four cycle internal combustion.
You're right. So there's that whole problem of requiring time to warm up before it actually produces what we call useful power, I suppose.
Right.
And the other thing is that, you know, we mentioned this just briefly here, but it can't change its output very quickly. So,
acceleration.
Exactly. The acceleration is poor, and as well as, you know, backing this thing down when you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But major enough that, you know, they're just not, like I said, right now they're not very practical.
I have a third reason that I think is an obstacle. And it's this: if we wanted to put something like this on a moving object for the average Jane and John Doe, you know, how would we regulate that external heat source, external cooling source? Because the energy it's going to take to produce a consistent external heat source, if you add that into the calculations, no matter how efficient the Stirling is, we still have this really inefficient, probably, heat source outside of it on a moving vehicle.
Yeah, you're still going to be carrying a propane tank. You're going to be carrying a natural gas tank. You're going to be carrying something along with you, whether maybe it's a wood-burning fireplace.
Yeah, maybe it's like a tractor trailer with just on fire.
Yeah, or you could dump all of your old yard waste into the front end of your car.
Nicely.
And you know, it decays, causes, you know, creates heat.
Yeah.
You could use that.
And we already said that you had some prep time in this, so
cow manure.
cow manure.
Yeah.
I was just the other day, remember when I was like, what am I going to do with all this? Why did I even buy all this cow manure?
Yeah, why do you have so much cow manure?
It was on sale. I have a weak spot, you know? Yeah.
Good reason.
Really?
Good reason.
You're way too nice.
You know, there's some kind of fun projects that you could do with Stirling engines as well. Now, the one that we've got on our site, I spotted this on another site as well. The photo that we have on our website comes from a site where they sell kits. And they sell, Stirling engine kits that you can build, and they gauge these by how many evenings it takes you to build them, right? So there's a, comfortable evenings, I guess. You know, it's not like you're working on it around the clock. But the one that you see on our webpage, that's a Stirling engine that costs right around, and the price right now is right around $429. And that one uses just the heat of your hand. That's the one I was mentioning that you can place in your hand, and
that's
it's enough
cool.
to. So the temperature difference is just the difference between the base plate heat and the top plate heat, or top plate being cooled or removing the heat from the base plate. But that's really, I mean, like I said, that's it only requires 7.5 degrees difference to operate. So you can heat it up just 7.2 degrees, I think is what they said.
Okay.
7.2 degrees more than whatever the top
ambient
plate.
Temperature.
Exactly. Yeah, the ambient temperature would be the top plate.
Yeah.
You're warming the lower plate. I guess you could cool it and it would do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
You could drop it down 7.2 degrees and it would operate.
So I've got to ask you, man, before we close out, what's your verdict on this? Because we've talked about several engines that have similarities but a very different roster of pros and cons for each type of engine. Now, we've gone into some of the cons here. We've gone into some of the positives. It's quiet. It's efficient.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used in multiple applications, and you can scale the size.
Yep.
But it, as you said,
it's very flexible with the fuels.
And it's flexible with fuels, which is actually...
You can't get more flexible with the fuels than that, I don't think. I mean,
right.
That's everything.
Unless you're just running, you know. But
true.
But that's the thing. I'm very interested... that John Doe from the text message world had such a great idea for covering this because it seems like that those advantages might be worth the work if we could just figure out how to stabilize a heat source, how to lessen the cost of the heat source.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Sky's the limit, man.
I think you're right. But right now they're being put to use in plenty of good applications, you know, where the benefits are best used.
Yeah.
Clearly, submarine is an excellent use for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yachts, I can understand why you would want.
You don't want your yacht to be loud.
No, if you're sitting in a dock area, you know, in Monaco or wherever, of course that's where you would be.
That's where you go,
of course. And you're sitting there, you don't want an 8-cylinder or 2 8-cylinder diesel engines running just so that you can have water pressure.
Yeah.
You know, you want something that's quiet operating. So I can understand the uses that it's. Being used for right now. And I think for hobby uses and just, you know, learning purposes, interesting, of course. I don't know where they would go in the future with this. I mean, our listener mentioned, the site.
Yeah, he mentioned the website.
Yeah, he mentioned a website that you can go to kind of, he says even Dean Kamen, spelled K-A-M-E-N or Kamen, sees a future in the Stirling engine as he redesigned it on his website. So he's apparently got some... new use for the Stirling engine that, like I said, I'm going to look this up afterwards and find out what's really going on with it.
We got something cooking, hopefully.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Cooking.
Yeah, I would love to see it. Well, I'm doing that as a segue into.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Listener mail.
All right. Hey, Ben, I got one today that comes from the blog.
We don't often
read the blog stuff on the podcast, but I figured today, why not? We're talking about engines, and we've got a comment from our Rotary Engine podcast.
Ah, yes.
Really, this is this one says that this person is actually least qualified to respond to this, but I've looked this up, and you know, there's some validity to this, so I'm going to mention it here, and everybody can kind of look it up and read likewise, something similar to this. He says he's not a mechanic, but he does know about the Mazda rotary engine.
Oh yeah.
Overfueling problem, you know, the flooding that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this online. I've now watched a couple of videos about this and how to unflood the RX-8 or RX-7 engines. And we had a listener that had written in about these and said that they actually had to get rid of their car, remember? Because they were having some trouble with it, cold starts. Apparently the problem is if you don't let the engine heat up and it it has excess fuel inside the chamber, which, remember, it has that that triangular piston thing the magical chamber that that operates somehow. The gas sits in there, and what it does is it eats away at the seal. It doesn't eat away at the seal. It eats away at the oil that is left behind in the cylinder that normally forms a seal between between the casing and the triangular shaped rotor. Okay, so you know how it contacts at the points, the tips.
Yeah.
If extra fuel is left in there, it deteriorates that seal, and you have to build that seal back up again with oil. So you've got a problem where you're flooding this thing. Because you're starting it and then turning it off before it's warmed up, or maybe it's a cold morning, you start it up and then you decide you got to run back in for something, turn it off, you've got a problem. So one way to fix this, and you can find this online. I mean, I don't recommend this to anybody, so don't do this just based on what I'm saying. But
your Mazda is not safe with us.
You can use this listener said that, and his name is Matthew.
Matthew. Yeah, thanks for writing in, Matthew.
Matthew says that his little brother sent him a video of him getting an RX-8 started in a pinch. And he says that it's a standard trick that a lot of these guys know about. And it involves pouring just a real small amount of automatic transmission fluid into the engine and then turning it over. And it'll continually turn over and over and over again. It does take a long while, but eventually the ATF burns off and it leaves behind an oil film, which allows the engine to start again. So it's a nice little trick. I've heard of things like this happening, and he says it's really actually kind of spectacular to watch because it creates a lot of smoke.
I bet it does.
And,
I was just thinking.
I think in the video that I was watching, they were even expecting a little bit of flame out of the exhaust pipe, but I didn't see any. But the video that I happened to watch, someone had purchased a car that was supposedly ruined. I'm doing finger quotes in there. Ruined. Because, it just wouldn't start. The mechanic now, remember this is a rotary engine. The mechanic said something about a broken timing belt or something like that. Well, these rotary engines don't have timing belts.
Right.
So that tells you the validity of that. But, the guy that bought the car for $30, says that he put $20 into parts to get this thing going again. And then he drove it for a couple of years and sold it for a few grand.
Crazy.
So he bought the car for $30, got it running for another 20.
Be on the lookout.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. But, he just bought this distressed car, and it looked like a nice car.
Yeah.
I think it was an RX-7.
You don't want to do that trick every day, though.
No.
You don't want to be that your normal starting routine.
No, no. Find a way around it, because if you know what causes that, avoid it. That's the best way to do it.
And what Matthew has persuaded me in his comment, obviously the RX is an inferior horror movie car. At this point, if it can't do cold starts, the scene in the movie where it's always like,
yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
No way.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
So was I, man. It just works out.
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, it'd be a perfect one to put on the old farm somewhere in the middle of darkness, and someone's struggling with the keys, fumbling with them.
Yeah.
Someone running at the car. That's where you're getting at.
That's
right?
Where I'm at. Yeah,
but I see.
But, we should also get our head back in the engine game because I think we've covered the Stirling engine. Pretty well, man. It might be time for us to head off into the sunset.
Maybe, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot more that people could dig into, and I'm sure that our listener who sent in the text message from somewhere in Alberta, he's probably saying, there's a lot more to cover, and that's not right, that type of thing. But honestly, the cycle, relatively easy. Just take a look at our site, get the basics down, and then investigate further. And that's what I do, and that's what you do as well.
And we sure hope you guys have enjoyed another installment of our continuing series on engines. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep this shindig going, right?
I think so, yeah. There's a lot more variety out there that we need to cover still. So I'm interested. I'm excited about doing some future podcasts about this.
But here's the catch, listeners. We need to know what kind of engines you want to hear about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a huge variety out there, so let us know what you want to hear about next, and we'll look into it.
Yeah, and real quick, before we head out, we've got to catch you guys up with some stuff. You can tell us via email, of course. You can also tell us via Facebook, via Twitter, and via the blog.
Yeah, because as you see, we sometimes read blog posts or responses to blog posts online. So.
Yeah, you never know what we're going to do. All right, so what about you guys? Tell us what you think. Send us an email at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.